This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yiswu Heeb coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We believe that Africa is a continent on the rise, and the rising tide will help everyone. A rising tide lifts all ships. And working together, we all stand to benefit.
That's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking today in Kenya. Details coming up.
Also, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi heads to Africa tomorrow. A grenade attack in Mogadishu wounds 9 people, and 8 people have been arrested in Serbia for allegedly smuggling migrants across the border.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, 9 civilians were wounded today in the Somali capital Mogadishu when a hand grenade was thrown into a crowded market. A local official says the grenade was thrown by a suspected member of the Al-Shabaab militant group. However, no one has claimed responsibility yet. The attack occurred as people were shopping for the Eid al-Fitr festival, which will mark the end of the holy month of Ramadan tomorrow.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stopped in Kenya today as part of a tour of 4 African countries. Lani Ruvaga has the story from Nairobi.
A detachment from the Kenyan Air Force greeted Netanyahu in Nairobi Tuesday. The Israeli Prime Minister later told reporters this trip is about rebuilding ties with Africa.
We believe that Africa is a continent on the rise, and the rising tide will help everyone. A rising tide lifts all ships. And working together, we all stand to benefit.
Investment and security cooperation are high on the agenda. Netanyahu said Israel is united with African countries against terrorism, calling it a common war. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta reiterated the point.
The single biggest challenge that we face, not only as a nation, not only as a continent, but as a community of nations, is the threat against our security caused by these deranged people who believe in no religion, but who threaten the livelihoods of innocent men, women, and children across the globe.
This is the first visit to Africa by an Israeli leader in 3 decades. Relations became strained after the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. Many African nations, including Kenya, cut diplomatic ties with Israel. Israel's friendship with the apartheid regime in South Africa was also a point of contention. But analysts say Israel is looking for new allies. African votes at the United Nations and other international bodies matter as Israel comes under pressure over its nuclear program and settlement efforts in the West Bank. Africa is also a key emerging market. Dr. Mumon Zhao is a Kenyan governance and national security strategist.
You know, you have China, you have Turkey, you have many other countries, the BRICS and so on, that are making a lot of headways in this part. And therefore, she's making a move in order to guard her own interests and to build common platforms of cooperation with African states, especially in the realm of security, agriculture, energy, and commerce.
Israel has announced a $13 million aid package for the continent. Netanyahu visited Uganda Monday. He heads to Rwanda before ending his tour in Ethiopia. Lenny Ruvaga, VOA News in Nairobi.
In Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi heads to Africa tomorrow. He's trying to strengthen ties with countries that are rich in resources. He also wants India to be a development partner on the continent as China continues to make inroads in the region. The Indian leader's five-day visit to Mozambique, South Africa, Tanzania, and Kenya follows a major summit in New Delhi last year with around 50 African heads of state.
Serbian officials say eight people have been arrested for allegedly smuggling migrants across the border into Hungary and on to Austria. The Serbian Interior Ministry says the smuggling ring charged the migrants about $1,200 each. It says the ring operated from February to June. Also, Hungary plans to hold a referendum in October on a European Union plan to relocate migrants and refugees. Hungary's government is already opposed to the plan to distribute 160,000 people among 28 countries. Hungary and Slovakia also have filed a legal challenge against the plan. AFP reports that so far, fewer than 3,000 people have been relocated under the plan, most coming from Greece and Italy. Hungary is being asked to take in about 1,300 people. More than 400,000 migrants and refugees traveled through Hungary last year before officials closed the borders.
A report by the UN Refugee Agency says poverty is rising among Syrian refugees living in neighboring countries. The agency's survey was carried out in five host countries and shows Syrian refugees are finding it increasingly more difficult to make ends meet. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The report finds significant progress has been made in providing assistance to millions of Syrian refugees living in Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, Iraq, and Egypt. But despite some definite accomplishments, it says poverty continues to grow and refugee communities in host countries have difficulty accessing basic services. Syria is into its sixth year of conflict. Nearly 5 million Syrians have taken refuge in those five countries. Turkey alone is sheltering 2.7 million Syrian refugees. Though the international community has increased its contributions for Syrian relief, the UN Refugee Agency says that remains far from enough. UNHCR spokesman Leo Dobbs says living conditions everywhere are becoming more difficult for the refugees. In Lebanon, for example, he says the average debt held by refugee households has increased in the first quarter of this year.
And the number living below the poverty level has risen to 70% compared to 50% 2 years ago. In Jordan also, there's a similar pattern. 90% of registered Syrian refugees in urban areas are below the national poverty line, while over 67% are living in debt. In Egypt, some 62,000 refugees are living in poverty.
Dobbs tells VOA the Syrian crisis has been going on for such a long time that people are running out of resources, opening them up to exploitation and protection risks associated with increasing poverty.
It's a disturbing development. Also, with impoverishment come the danger that people become even more vulnerable and they're susceptible to negative coping mechanisms. Children going out to work, people being forced into commercial sex work, those are some of them.
The UNHCR says much more money is needed to prevent more Syrian refugees from becoming impoverished. The report says less than one-third, or $1.38 billion of the $4.55 billion requested by the UN, intergovernmental and non-governmental organizations early this year, has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A U.S.-style national terrorism center? That is one of the recommendations coming from a French parliamentarian inquiry into last year's Paris attacks. Lisa Bryan in Paris says the report also cites intelligence shortfalls leading up to the attacks and limits to the current state of emergency.
The conclusions are part of 39 recommendations in a new report by a parliamentary commission probing last year's Paris attacks and are aimed at preventing a repeat. The report describes communications failures among France's different intelligence agencies leading up to the two attacks that together killed 147 people. That includes dropping surveillance against jihadist Saeed Kouachi, who attacked the Charlie Hebdo newspaper with his brother Sharif in January 2015, and failing to track down another January assailant, Amedi Coulibaly, after he became radicalized in prison. It also faults Belgium for slowness in tracking down surviving November attack suspect Salah Abdeslam. The commission proposes overhauling intelligence services to create a single counter-terror hub, similar to the U.S. National Counterterrorism Center set up after the September 2001 attacks. It also concludes that France's controversial state of emergency has had limited impact on security.
Et donc je propose une sortie progressive de Sentinelle par le remplacement.
Commission member and socialist lawmaker Sébastien Petrosanta told reporters that France should recruit more police to replace soldiers now deployed with a state of emergency and equip forces with special training and handguns. But he claims it was impossible to avoid the most horrific attack, November's killings at the Bataclan nightclub. Victims Association head Georges Saline, who lost a daughter at the Bataclan, disagrees. Saline says without intelligence failures and shortcomings, the Bataclan attack might have been avoided. He says he needs time to study the report, but he supports many of its conclusions. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says he'll reconsider an earlier decision to pull troops out of the AU peacekeeping force in Somalia. Mr. Museveni says Uganda's 6,000 troops may stay in Somalia if AU and UN officials promise to build an effective Somali military. The Ugandan leader announced last month that he was withdrawing troops from AMISOM because the AU had failed to build an effective local military to replace the AU mission. AMISOM currently has 22,000 troops in Somalia.
The Red Sea port of Assab has provided a boost to financially troubled Eritrea. The Asmara government has quietly leased the mostly unused port for a rumored $500 million. United Arab Emirates naval vessels have been sighted using the Eritrean port since earlier this year. It gives the UAE greater access to Yemen. Cedric Barnes of the International Crisis Group talked to VOA's David Arnold about the possible change of fortune for Eritrea.
The UAE leased Assab, it seems, to use as a kind of naval depot for their forces that were involved in the Saudi-led Yemeni campaign recently. I think they've taken a relatively long lease. I mean, the details have not exactly been made public, but they would have paid a reasonable amount of money for it. I would imagine they'll still want to keep a foothold in Assab. It has stakes all the way along the Red Sea coast and along the Indian Ocean. It recently lost its operations in Djibouti, and it's taken up an option in Berbera in Somaliland.
Was the leasing of Assab somewhat of a financial boon to Eritrea?
The rumours are that it was a huge financial boon, you know, over $500 million in the region of that, and figures have been mentioned, and certainly dwarfed the assistance that Eritrea recently got from the European Union to help stem the migration crisis through development aid. The UAE lease of Assab would probably amount to more than twice the amount that the EU have given.
They also have a lot of revenues from the mining.
They have revenues from mining, but I think it's been overestimated. As far as I know, the Eritreans promised a lot up front to the mining companies. They borrowed a lot of money to invest, to make the mine a joint invest. They're not getting pure profits from the mines. it's shared. So whilst there certainly will be a revenue stream, it won't be huge.
You mentioned that there is some funding that's come from the EU. Do you know what they're using that money for?
The EU money is basically it's a restart of a frozen EU development fund. It was frozen a couple of years ago. The renewed money is, I think, a lot of it has been put towards power generation, upgrade Trez power supplies. But there's also an element to it that is about development, which is supposed to help reduce the amount of young people leaving Eritrea. And the idea was, of course, that the quid pro quo could have been an end to what seems to be an open-ended national service in Eritrea, but that doesn't seem to have been forthcoming.
Is Eritrea increasing its international image, improving it in any way?
I think there's a lot of reasons why Eritrea has been coming in from the cold, as it were. Eritrea would say that it's never been isolated. It's just that everybody else isolated it, and they would claim that they had good relations across the world. I think Eritrea has been working quite hard over the last few years to restore faith in its image and what it can contribute in the region. It's still not there yet. There's still a lot of suspicion and skepticism towards the government. But compared to where they were 2 or 3 years ago, yes, certainly they seem to be rehabilitated to a certain extent.
That was Cedric Barnes of the International Crisis Group. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold.
Human rights activists in South Sudan are calling on the government to address widespread abuses that occurred during the two-year conflict. They say these include killings and kidnappings by unknown gunmen, forced evacuations of civilians, and arbitrary arrest of journalists. The activists say the government must fully implement the peace deal to ensure perpetrators are brought to justice. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
At a forum organized yesterday by the South Sudan Human Rights Commission in Juba, a broad cross-section of participants discussed wide-ranging human rights abuses during the conflict in South Sudan, including gender-based violence. Nyol Justiniak, acting chairperson of South Sudan's Human Rights Commission, says government officials were invited to the discussion because government security and military personnel are the primary suspects in a vast array of alleged human rights violations committed across the country.
We know during the conflict, the denial of basic civil liberties was heightened in the state of Juba and other states that were controlled by the government. And we have seen in areas where the war was being conducted, gross violations that are unprecedented in South Sudan history.
Yak says the conflict that erupted in December 2013 was the result of the government restricting political and civil rights of citizens.
The war itself did break out because of denial of basic civil rights to begin with. And so if we have to stop that from happening and stop a recurrence to that again, then we have to ensure that rights are guaranteed.
Pakata Charles is coordinator for the Human Rights Defenders Network in South Sudan. He says he and his colleagues have documented untold abuses committed against unarmed civilians that began in Juba and quickly spread into Upper Nile and other parts of the country.
Human rights violations have occurred in a very unwarranted manner. It is in rather unimaginable that the South Sudanese people can cause such atrocities to their own people.
President Salva Kiir's legal advisor, Lawrence Kobandi, acknowledges the government must do more to support the work of civil society activists and human rights watchdogs in South Sudan.
In some countries, and I'm advocating for this, government should empower civil society to do good jobs by giving them money, allocating budgets for civil society.
And Kobandi admits there are some individuals in government who are hostile to human rights defenders and journalists. But he says the president is committed to protecting human rights and civil rights.
Maybe individuals are looking at your advices and your opinions, honest opinions, as opposition. Some individuals, but as a government, we look at these opinions as tools that improve our image as a government.
Government officials, human rights defenders, and civil society activists at the forum agreed to continue talking to each other about the status of human rights in South Sudan and to find solutions that all parties can work toward as a team to address human rights abuses. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The International AIDS Conference takes place later this month in Durban, South Africa. Perhaps the greatest achievement in the fight against HIV/AIDS is that it's no longer a death sentence. Instead, AIDS can be chronic, manageable disease if people get the treatment they need. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
People undergo HIV testing for a number of reasons. It's a simple test, and they can know their results in just 5 minutes. A man who identifies himself only as Rigo says he encourages all Latinos to get tested.
It is important because no one knows what is going on with their partner or ex-partner.
Maria arrives for testing with a pretty toddler named Zoe.
For me, it's very important to do an HIV test because we take care of our family and friends. Because if you don't know, how would you know if you're infecting a loved one?
HIV/AIDS is both treatable and preventable. People who have the virus can live normal lives as long as they stay on treatment. Treatment can also help those at risk of contracting HIV stay HIV negative. In most segments of U.S. society, AIDS transmission rates are declining, according to Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Frieden spoke to VOA via Skype.
We've seen huge decreases in heterosexual transmission, more than two-thirds, 80% reductions generally. We've seen huge decreases in injection drug use as a cause of transmission. But among young men who have sex with men, we've seen increases in HIV infection.
The groups in the United States that are most at risk are Hispanics and African Americans. Rodney McCoy counsels both groups at Nova Salud.
Women of childbearing age and young black gay and bisexual men seem to be most at risk for HIV and for new cases of HIV infection. And then when we look at who progresses from HIV onto AIDS, again, blacks and Latinos are most at risk for that.
Nova Salud helps people remain HIV free, or if they're HIV positive, it helps them get into treatment and learn more about the virus. That way they can remain healthy and their partners avoid contracting it. Sometimes it's hard to persuade people to get tested so they know their status. McCoy says Nova Salud takes a different approach.
The first thing we do is we acknowledge that there is stigma.
McCoy says one way to get around this issue of stigma is to make HIV testing routine.
If you go to the doctor to get your blood work for cholesterol, for high blood pressure, why not start including HIV and STDs?
The goal everywhere is to get to the point where 90% of those with HIV know it, and that 90% of those who are positive get treatment, and finally, that the virus is reduced to undetectable levels in 90% of those in treatment. The theory is that this will end the AIDS epidemic as a global public health threat by 2030. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Africa.